Welcome to Business Watch. Well, the first edition of the BE Economics Annual Transformation in South African Asset Management Survey was published back in 2009, at which time there were just 14 black-owned asset managers who combined managed 91 billion rand. Fast forward 13 years later, and today there are over 50 black-owned asset managers managing close to 700 billion rand, indicating that black market share has been increasing steadily. Certainly in the past couple of years, the number of black private equity fund managers has grown, and Alex Forbes, South Africa's largest investments multi-manager, has launched a transformation policy to make an impactful contribution to the sustainability and the relevance of the asset management industry in South Africa. The policy has set transformative criteria for both supporting and selecting asset managers and stockbrokers, with an emphasis on gender diversity to ensure more black females are included in critical strategic and investment decision roles. To talk about this, I'm joined now by Lebo Tobisi, who's head of research at Alex Forbes, Shafiq Abrahams, executive and principal officer of the Eskom Pension and Provident Fund, and Dwayne Cable, head of SA Quality Capability and Portfolio Manager at 91. Lebo, let's just dial it back a bit and look at the evidence. So what sort of progress have we made over the last 10 years in transforming or normalizing the asset management industry in this country?
Thanks, Michael, and good morning to the listeners. And I think it's important to take an evidence-based approach, Michael, to better understand, the trajectory of transformation within the industry. And so in 2020, we embarked on constructing a transformation survey that looked at many facets around, what have we seen around the movements of BE levels? What is the representation like within investment teams, within senior leadership of investments businesses, black economic interest within these organizations? And so I think generally what we've seen, especially in recent years, that there's been definitely an improvement. You would have seen that, at the back end of 2017, when the financial charter codes were amended, that, we saw a generalized drop of BE levels, but there's been a positive trajectory. We've seen that there's been improvements in black representation. When I use the word black, I mean in the broad sense, including African, Indian, colored, and Asians, that there's been improvement. But I think largely what we want to do as an organization is to support the acceleration of this improvement. And so I think part of what we're doing definitely within our own transformation policy is to make sure that we continue on this trajectory. And we've been very mindful specifically about the things that are important in an asset management industry. And so I think, intellectual capital is critical within the context of the asset management industry. And that's why our focus has been about seeing a broad-based representation of investment professionals within the industry. And this is, by the way, Michael, consistent with global research. I think diversity and inclusion and equity research globally does actually, in fact, suggest that more diverse teams does lead to better performance. And what we're trying to achieve in this regard is definitely a very similar outcome.
Absolutely. It makes sense, doesn't it, Dwayne, from an asset management perspective, to ensure that there's no echo chamber confirmation bias that you get from homogenous teams. If you've got diverse teams looking at different asset classes or investment theses, you're ultimately going to be a lot more rigorous, aren't you? From your vantage point, what do you make of the progress that the industry has made over the last 10 years? Dwayne?
So firstly, from my side, Michael, I think the industry, while we've still got room to go, I think we should not forget the amount of significant progress that has been made over time. I mean, if you think through my background, I mean, I come from a significantly underprivileged background, sort of graduated from a government school. When I joined the industry in the early part of the 2000s, the industry looked very different. And there was a significant amount of people who invested in my career. It's that spirit of Ubuntu, which we speak about. I am because you are. And people that have invested in me, trained me up, brought me through to the point where I am now. And if I look around, whether it's at industry events, whether it's dealing with clients, certainly if I look across the floor at 91, there's been significant change and progress that has been made. And I think the important point is that has led to more inclusive teams, diversity of thought. It's led to an environment where we've challenged one another, tested our biases, but more importantly, delivered better outcomes for our clients. And just echoing what Lebo has said, this is ultimately about delivering great outcomes for our clients. And if you can look at the sustainability of the team, where we are developing people from previously disadvantaged backgrounds, giving them a scope to gain in seniority. I mean, in my wildest dreams, growing up in apartheid South Africa, I would never have dreamed that I would be a senior portfolio manager at a global asset manager, having a position of power to influence change, having been a beneficiary of lots of development and time that people have spent in my career and bringing me forward, now being in a position of power where I can empower young people coming through and in turn develop them, I think speaks to the very attractive opportunity we have in South Africa as South Africans to drive change. And I think we all have a role to play in that, and we should all be proud of the progress that has been made, and we should all embrace the ability to do more.
The ability to do more is a good point, because just from my experience, you know, running a daily radio show, looking for particularly black female market commentators, it's still very difficult to find. I mean, there's still a long road to go, but I take your point. Very important progress has been made. And Shafiq, when it comes to the asset owners, and you know, this is really the pension funds of the workers on the ground, who really are the majority of South Africans. Surely, as the asset owners, you have a critical and key role to play here. And I know the Eskom Pension and Provident Fund has always been very active in this space. What do you make of the progress we've made to date? And just take me a little bit more through your approach to helping normalize the asset management industry.
Yeah, no, thanks, Mark. As a pension fund with long-dated liabilities and pensions to pay, we recognize that the sustainability of that investment return is definitely linked to the sustainability of the society which we operate. And so our philosophy and approach is that we need to do more to ensure the sustainability of society through our investment approach. And so we started with the asset management industry, trying to influence the transformation within our partnership, going back as 2011, and we definitely seen progress since 2011 coming through to now. We are very, very satisfied with the stance taken by Alex Forbes. We think it provides a critical impetus to the change required to move forward. We think the position that Alex Forbes has taken is very targeted, aimed at creating meaningful participation. And we'd like to encourage others to join that wave of change and movement. But from our side, we also do believe we still have to make inroads when it comes to female representation within the industry, and a lot more has to be done. So I think the road ahead is still long, and there's still a bit of work to be done in that regard.
So, Lebo, let's talk about that policy. Yeah, just tell me exactly what the policy entails.
Yeah. And so I think, as I said, you know, we've taken a very evidence-based approach to our policy, and, you know, and in it, you will see that it's very broad-based in its approach. You know, I think we're very cognizant, and I'd like to continue in this vein around, you know, females, in that, you know, our survey, in fact, you know, through the insights, and I mean, we had 5.1 trillion rand worth of respondents in that survey, and I think it's great because then you can make some inferences. You know, from that survey, in fact, you know, what we clearly see is that almost 60% of employees within an investments business are female. And so, in fact, no wonder when you look deeply into our own policy that we have made some clear requirements around female representation. But, you know, going into the policy, we have four main pillars. The first and most important pillar is how do we engage with our partners within the asset management industry, in that, you know, we've clarified a minimum BE level. We've clarified that, you know, a minimum BE level of level 3. We've articulated a minimum 40% black representation within the investment team. Of that 40%, 40% must be black females. And we've also then articulated a minimum 40% black representation in the senior management of these organizations, and that's the main pillar. And this speaks to inclusivity, and so this references all the asset management firms within the industry, those who are incumbents in our portfolios, those in fact would like to do business or we're looking to do business with, those who are in fact are part of, call it, the advice framework in our consulting business. And so that is pillar number one. The second pillar goes to talk about how, in fact, when we do transitions and trades at our level, you know, our engagements with stockbrokers, and so we've specified that, you know, over the next 5 years, we will progressively increase our trades with majority black-owned stockbrokers over the next 5 years to as high as 40% of our allocation, and so not just the asset management industry. The next two pillars speak specifically around how we support fledgling asset managers and those who are emergent. I think we have a long history in supporting startup asset managers, and so it was important that within this policy we articulate clear requirements around definitions. And so there are managers, in fact, who are in their very early stages of startups, and we've said, you know, these managers typically would have a maximum of $2 billion in assets under management, should have a track record of less than 5 years, and those, in fact, would form part of what we typically in the industry call incubation. Mm-hmm. But there are managers, in fact, who are beyond that term, who also require assistance. And so we've defined these as emerging managers. These are managers with assets under management of no larger than $15 billion and have a track record of less than 10 years. And so some of our solutions would fit well with some of these managers. And so it was important that we take a very broad-based approach. The last pillar, which in fact is our, how we would approach the enterprise and supply development, this largely is a group effort. Won't sit necessarily within our investments business, but it's also to say we know for all organizations that the pillars of success are not just investment excellence, that, you know, operational support is important, personnel support, and so we'll be using our own balance sheet as an organization to launch a Black Asset Manager Enterprise Supply Development Program where we assist businesses with regards to some of these elements that I've spoken to, even, you know, elements like office space as an example. And so I think, as I said, ours is to make sure that we create a sustainable industry, one that really builds core skills, intellectual capital, and we're looking at different avenues of doing this, not just looking at the small managers, but how do we engage with the larger asset managers in this regard.
Well, it's those small managers that eventually become the large, the 91s. And Dwayne, if you look at it, often we see that's where there's the fall off, in that sort of 2 billion to 10 billion AUM spot where you're a small emerging manager. And we see a lot of those managers failing to get the scale and to grow and to potentially become a mid-level, maybe a 91 one day. What do you think the big challenges are in helping these smaller emerging managers scale?
In the first point, I would say, certainly as 91, I mean, we are quite encouraged by the progress. So we definitely want to be part of the solution in terms of making the entire industry more sustainable. I think when it comes to these trends, it's one where we all have our role to play, and I think that's important to acknowledge. But, I mean, maybe where I am encouraged, and I think Lebo mentioned it on Thursday at the launch of the policy, is that there's going to be unintended consequences. There's going to have to be things that we think about. And I get encouraged knowing that this is a live document that will continue to evolve and think about. And how we get certainly those smaller managers to scale and buy in is going to be incredibly tough, because we know at the end of the day it's about your scale, your ability to attract and retain talent, your ability to grow and win over clients. That is significant. And when I think of where 91 is as a business and the role that we've been played, there's no doubt that our scale has allowed us to make an impact. So to maybe just give you some numbers to assist. So if you think of where 91 sits today, I mean, we are level one triple B, double E contributors, so well ahead of the targets that has been set. I mean, if you think of our senior leadership, our South African Manco, two-thirds of that South African management company is Black, of which half of those Black individuals are female. And then if you shift to the investment team, we're sitting today, 51% of our investment professionals being black, of which 38% are black female. So again, it's the one where we're almost at the 40%, but there's more work to be done. Mm. Why do I mention that? Because it's about development, attracting and retaining talent, and where we are privileged is that we can invest in people's career. I mean, we run a graduate program. All of that comes at a significant cost to the business. We train this talent, I think, since 2015. More than 68 graduates have come through the program at 91. We've managed to retain them, about two-thirds of them in the business. And it's the cost of and the time spent in terms of developing, training, retaining talent, which again speaks to where we have benefited from our scale perspective. So to come to your original question, where we've got to help maybe some of the smaller managers is to make sure that they are able to go along that journey. And whether it is, again, dealing with some of the unintended consequences that come from this policy where the likes of a 91 and some other managers that have trained a lot of the young talent in the business, sometimes we'll lose some of that talent to some of those smaller managers, that when we are judged, that some of that should not just be seen as a negative. Mm-hmm. So maybe thinking about some of the stats that has come out of the Alex Forbes policy about looking at retention rates. Mm-hmm. Yes, you've got to look at the data. You've got to understand what's driving those retention rates. And so you'd need data to track. Mm-hmm. But importantly, to assess, are the benefits of having the big organizations that's training a pool of talent, that's making that talent available to the broader industry, and seeing that also as a positive. So I think we need to encourage more of that and recognize that. And I think that will go a long way to helping those smaller managers get talent, scale, and certainly benefit and become the next 91s of our industry.
Absolutely, yeah, because it really wouldn't be beneficial to be punishing the large managers for doing that training and then losing that talent, which so often happens. So, you know, you get to a certain level, you leave and you go start your own boutique manager and, you know, with big ambitions. Shafiq, what is the role here of the asset consultant in all of this that really is that key go-between, between the funds, between the asset managers, and how are they being included in these conversations?
I think it's critical that there's an alignment between the funds, the trustees, the leadership of funds, and the asset consultants. And we find in our research, when pension fund trustees take the lead, we can get asset consultants to work with us and to partner with us. Now, in the EPPF space, We've done some development programs where we develop emerging managers, both within the listed and the private market space. And that program says that we can work with the different partners. We can develop skilled talent, future businesses through dedicated allocations of assets. And we think that's a great model for the growth of the industry, for introduction of new talent and managers into the industry, but also stimulates economic growth. It stimulates skills and talent growth within those different businesses. So I think the partnership between the funds, the asset allocators, and the broader management is critical. We all join hands, we find synergy and alignment, and we make the impact. And we've got some real great results over the years through those partnerships.
Lebo, there's a lot of consolidation happening in the pension space, and the shift to umbrella funds, there is a concern that sort of consolidation will hinder more than help transformation. What are your thoughts on that?
I want to echo the importance of saying that we want an environment that is enabling for transformation, where we are building, sort of these core skills. And I think it's important to acknowledge the drivers behind why some of this consolidation exists within the umbrella space. I think Dwayne touched on, sort of the headwinds of costs. What we also see is around competencies or making sure that you can run an umbrella fund. And so I think, in fact, the consolidation is largely driven by making sure that, all aspects are managed. But I don't think that it will necessarily hinder transformation, because the reality is that, if it's driven from an environment where we can see that, in fact, you know, the right change is happening, that, in fact, there won't be any hindrance in this regard. You know, circling back to some of the points that Dwayne mentioned, that, you know, the one question I typically get when we talk about this policy is, you know, is this achievable? You know, are we going to create an environment where managers are going to find it very difficult to actually attain this? And the answer is no, because the data does in fact suggest that there's definitely been an improvement in trajectory. Where we've seen the most improvements definitely at BE levels, where we've seen the second better improvement is around Black representation. I think female representation is where the industry is definitely going to have to think very deeply around training and the likes when it comes to this. But I don't see that the consolidation necessarily is going to hamper this at all, because, you know, I really do see that transformation is not necessarily a competitive edge, and so partnerships are going to be important. The level of engagements that we have with, you know, players such as the Eskom Provident Pension Fund, the asset management industry at large, on an annual basis, we have what we call the CIO-CEO engagements, where we sit with the senior leadership of all organizations and talk strategic themes about where the industry is headed. And it's through these engagements that we elevate conversations such as ESG, where we elevate conversations such as transformation. And so even prior to us even launching this policy, you know, 3 years ago, one thing that we definitely did was to elevate this conversation of ESG and transformation. You can see that the industry has in fact heard us, because the evidence does suggest that there's been improvements. And so I think there may be some unintended consequences that come with consolidation of the industry, but I think, you know, the evidence is definitely overwhelming around, you know, the positive benefits that come from having diversity within the industry.
And to Dwayne, just stay with you for a second longer, Lebel, to Dwayne's earlier point about some of the unintended consequences around, you know, recognizing prior training that the big firms are doing and then losing that talent. You did say it's a living document. Is this something that you're continually engaging the industry with?
Yes, definitely. You know, as I said, you know, we engage with the industry on many different levels. The survey itself is intended to be run on an annual basis, and so the data itself will start to deepen this conversation. But, you know, the one thing that we will definitely have is a separate discussion on transformation with the managers. And so when we DD the managers, we typically have an investment due diligence. There's an operational due diligence. There's an ESG due diligence. What we'll have specifically is a transformation due diligence, where we really focus specifically on the intentions of organization broadly. And I think it's through these engagements that we'll better learn some of the nuances of where the challenges are, where we'll pick up some of these unintended consequences. And so, you know, the one thing I didn't mention, Michael, is that we have opted for a phased-in approach. Over the next 3 years, we are saying that the industry will move towards, you know, complying to these requirements over a 3 year period, to allow for a much more smoother transition in this regard, because we're very cognizant that, you know, the one thing that we don't want to do is to have organizations that have actually been implementing their strategies over a long period of time that already comply on this basis to be severely impacted or negatively impacted by, you know, organizations that hadn't. And so it was important for us to create this phased-in approach to minimize, you know, what we otherwise deem as these unintended consequences.
Oh, that's a just transition in the asset management space. Yeah, just as we've got 2 minutes to go, Dwayne, I mean, all of this really also hinges on a growing and thriving public capital market, doesn't it? And I know the JSE has been in the crosshairs of activist shareholders and the broader market at the moment because of the delisting crisis, has published a discussion document. It wants people to comment, it wants the industry to comment. What can we do to firstly stem the bleeding and turn things around and really reinvigorate our public capital markets?
Yeah, so if we are honest, Michael, I mean, there's no doubt that the industry has faced some challenges for growth over the last few years. So, I mean, what we do need is an increasing opportunity set in South Africa. We need growth. We need businesses to succeed. We need economic growth to certainly drive our savings pool. But out of that, I mean, there's certainly also some other structural headwinds that we are facing. I mean, in terms of the shift from our Reg 28 to allow more offshore investing. And how we navigate that, again, from an unintended consequences perspective is quite clear. I mean, at 91, we've seen it. I mean, I'm incredibly passionate about transformation, doing the right thing, again, driving change. But for those of you who know me, know I'm a diehard investor. I love investing. I want to compete globally. And I get the benefit at 91 to look after our client savings in South Africa, but also to grow and develop as a global investor and manage offshore portfolios and deal with my colleagues in London and New York and to grow as well. And I could have an option where I could say, I'm just going to be based in London. I'm not going to have anything to do with South Africa. I think that would be a massive loss to our industry, because if you think of the extent of the training that I do for the team, the development, the impact that you've got just for your South African clients, which as a South African bull, I care deeply about this country, mm-hmm. making sure we navigate some of those challenges is also going to be some of the headwinds that we think about. So unless we deal with the growth issue, so have a growing industry, make sure we navigate some of this volatility to create a healthy platform, I think we are going to face some headwinds in the year ahead to actually execute and land on the plan. Again, to echo what Lebo said on Thursday, I don't think there's any excuses. We want to be part of the solution. We don't underestimate the challenges that are out there, but I think if we all apply our minds and try to make a positive impact, this is actually a very inclusive plan. It's not about quotas. It's actually quite a diverse plan, and it brings everyone to the fore. And if we all embrace that, I think it can to bring about tremendous change, which is going to be very positive for the industry. And certainly 91 and myself personally would like to be a part of that change.
Yeah, it all boils down to growth. And often when I hear CEOs blame the tepid local economic environment on their poor results, I say, well, what are you doing to lobby government to ensure that we change policies that are hampering or constraining growth, remove red tape, speed up those reforms? Because we can't just sit here and wring our hands and say, well, the South African economy isn't growing. We all have a role to play here. And great to hear you elucidate on that, Dwayne, and as a South African bull myself, very, very pleased that you didn't decide to do the office from London thing. Thank you very much to all of you. That was Dwayne Cable, a PM at 91, who is joined by Lebo Tabisi, senior researcher at Alex Forbes, and Shafiq Abrahams, chief executive and PO of the Eskom Pension and Provident Fund, talking about the continued transformation of the local asset management industry. You're watching Business Watch. We'll be right back.